We are continuing our series. This whole year we've been talking about the CERT program, the Christian Emergency Response Team. And so these lessons just go along with that theme. As you're sharing the word with people, sometimes you run into some of the same objections that people have to Christianity over and over. And so that's some of the topics that I'm hitting this time, is sometimes people don't theoretically have a problem with religion except for one thing. There's just that one stumbling block that's in their mind. So we talked about, with some people, it's the problem of there being evil and suffering in the world. Some people, they said, well, I know those miracles couldn't be true. And we covered those the last couple of weeks. This week I'm going to be talking about evolution. And the objection is, well, evolution explains life, so God isn't needed anymore. And so that's what you run into with some people. And this kind of all went back to November 22nd of 1859, when Charles Darwin published Origin of Species. Interestingly, Darwin wasn't actually an atheist on there, but a lot of people have used the work that he published, the book called Origin of Species, as a reason not to believe in God anymore. And so this has led to, kind of a widespread phenomenon where people said, okay, well, that was the last thing we needed God for, was creation, so now we don't need him there anymore. There was Michael Denton, a molecular biologist and physician, said as far as Christianity was concerned, the advent of the theory of evolution was catastrophic. The decline in religious belief probably can be attributed more to the propagation and advocacy by the intellectual and scientific community of the Darwinian version of evolution than to any other single factor. So he's saying, because of this, this is what led a lot of scientists to stop believing in God, was this idea. Richard Dawkins, a British biologist and famous atheist, said Darwin made it possible to be an intellectually fulfilled atheist. Another quote says, Darwin's greatest accomplishment was to show how the development of life is the result of a natural process without any need to resort to a creator. So these are some of the beliefs that people have today. They just look at it, it's like, okay, well, all that's been explained now. So why do we need to inject God into the process if life just naturally occurs as part of the normal scheme of things? So that's what we're going to be talking about today, is how likely is that scenario? If you just think about it, the natural assumption is that this is, what all scientists will subscribe to, that this idea. And the thought being is that as the Earth formed, that, the right chemicals came into contact with each other and they gradually ordered themselves into the life that appears. And the reason why this thought came about, a long time ago, people didn't really understand even what life was, and they just noticed any time that you left things unattended, you leave out a slice of bread long enough and things start growing on it. If you have water and it's way out some landlocked area and you go and test it, it's got microorganisms in it. And so many centuries ago, people thought life just spontaneously sprung up anywhere. And so then as people understood it a little bit more, they realized, okay, that isn't life just developing from scratch. It's coming in from somewhere else on the planet. The reason why the stuff starts growing on bread is because there are things in the air that are on there. But there's still that thought process, is that that's how life got started initially. So we're going to kind of examine that and see if it's possible. And first of all, just to be clear, as we're talking about evolution occurs. There's no question about that. people change. People get taller over time. The species changes. There are new species of dogs that are developed all the time. There are a lot of different ways that species change over time. And that's called microevolution. And that occurs. That's unquestionable. You can see that happening. In fact, you can even cause it to happen by selective breeding and things like that. So that a lot of people confuse that idea with the idea of macroevolution. Macroevolution is whenever one species turns into a completely different type of animal over time. And that's the part that's really in question, as to whether you had dinosaurs that evolved into birds. So that's really what's at work, is can a reptile turn into a mammal over a period of time, or an amphibian turn into a reptile, or there's a lot of questions that surround that. And for a long time the idea was, well, there's not really a whole lot of transitional examples between species, and then they found a few here and there that you might could consider that, a few places where it looked like there might be the imprint of fossilized feathers around what appears to be a dinosaur and some things. So there are a lot of questions there. But really what it comes down to, the idea of whether evolution, whether life originating by evolution would come down to, is can life appear where there was no life before? And that's really the question. You can argue micro versus macro evolution, and different people have different opinions. But if it's not possible for life to develop in an area where there wasn't previous life, then that kills the idea of evolution as the start. So that's really kind of what we're going to look at today, is that possible? Because it's been the effort of scientists now for a long time to try to show how that's possible. And a lot of things, if you go back to biology textbooks, usually the part where they talk about life beginning forms a short paragraph of an entire textbook that's probably this thick. And that's because nobody really knows what that process was, because it's still not explainable as far as how that process occurred. What you will see a lot of times in that section of the textbook is an experiment by Stanley Miller in 1957. He decided that he was going to show how life began. So the theory was, you get all these different chemicals that have naturally formed on the earth in its development, and you get them all together kind of in one spot, what they called a primordial pool, and then there's the injection of an energy source, presumably a lightning strike or something like that, but causes all these chemicals to form life. So he set up this experiment where he was going to prove exactly how that occurred. He was going to show how that happened. And so he set up his experiment. He used a bolt of electricity to simulate lightning, and he created some amino acids, which are kind of the building blocks of life. He showed how that can happen on there. And so that's generally the proof that's used in the textbooks for how life began. But if you examine that, it kind of starts to fall apart. First of all, he had to recreate the conditions that were there. We're not really sure what the creations were, and so he kind of arbitrarily decided that the atmosphere at that time was made up of ammonia and methane and hydrogen. And if you know what the atmosphere is made of, it's not those things, but he assumed that the early atmosphere was made up of those. And why did he do that? Not because that was based on any experimental evidence. He realized that if his experiment was going to work, that's the way he had to do it. Because if he used an oxygen and nitrogen and carbon dioxide atmosphere the way it has now, that his experiment would be impossible. Oh, I'm sorry, Ray. Go ahead.
Well,
And to be honest, we don't know that he didn't on a lot of these things. But
the thing is, he only gave us what we needed for knowledge and for understanding.
You're right. He didn't try to write the Bible as a scientific textbook or anything. He's telling us what happened. But we don't have a lot of description about the timeline or the processes that God uses. He just says it happened, and that's the way it happened. And so as we're talking about this, I'm going to assume for a moment that on all this, that the age of the universe is, as scientists say, and that it's 13.6 billion years old, and that the Earth is 4.6 billion years old. Because to be honest, we don't know whether it is or not. We weren't there. There is a lot of scientific evidence that the Earth is old. And if we assume that those passages in Genesis were speaking metaphorically, which a lot of passages in the Old Testament do, that it is possible that the Earth is old. That doesn't mean that God didn't create life, if it is. God operates on his own timeline. And so, I don't want to feel like I've got to lock him into the idea that Earth is a few thousand years old. It might be. It's possible. God can do whatever he wants to and make that possible. He could have used millions of years. What is time to God? It's meaningless to God. So, God could make the age of the earth and the universe as old as he wants. And in fact, if you think about it that way, that adds to the glory of God. If you think that God spent 13 billion years creating the perfect atmosphere, I don't mean that as far as the air. I mean the conditions under which he wanted to create life. That makes you feel pretty special. If God spent billions of years creating the perfect environment for us to live in, you ought to feel kind of privileged. There are Christians that believe in a young earth versus an old earth, and I'm not going to criticize either belief, because the way I look at it, either is equally possible, and neither detracts from the deity of God. Yes? And a lot of the scientific knowledge establishes the idea of God, and that's one of the things we're going to talk about today, is that for years people just assumed that the universe had always existed, which gave you unlimited time for life to develop. And in fact, it was a big shock to the community when the theory came out that the universe began, at this finite point in time, because a lot of people looked at it, it's like, well, that essentially proves the existence of God if the universe just suddenly came into existence the way that the Bible describes it. That was a big blow to a lot of scientists, but you know, the idea of the universe coming into existence at a point in time is one of the most scientifically proven principles that there is. And so that really caused a lot of people. It was, a lot of scientists were really reluctant to accept that idea because, for one thing, it didn't give you that unlimited time for life to develop. And in fact, it shortened the process quite a bit. For life to develop by natural means. Because if you assume that the Earth is 4.6 billion years old, that still sounds like a lot of time for life to develop, but it's really not. Biologically and geologically speaking, I mean, for a lot of that time, if that's true, the Earth would have been too hot to sustain life. And then if you look in the fossil record, if you assume an old Earth, that life began to exist almost immediately as soon as conditions were right, which really narrows that 4.6 billion years down to a few million years in which life would have developed. Which means if you subscribe to that idea, that also makes it almost impossible for that to have happened naturally. In that period of time in particular, but actually as I go through the evidence, for it to have happened at all is extremely unlikely. But, you know, once again, let's be generous and make a lot of assumptions that the Earth is 4.6 billion years old and these chemicals were all in the right place at the right time in this pool of water and lightning struck. And let's even grant that, okay, maybe the atmosphere was at that time different and allowed for those amino acids to be formed. Amino acids aren't life. And it is true that amino acids can naturally develop over time, and they're the building blocks of life, but they're not life. Just because you create these amino acids in our body doesn't mean you've created life. They've still got to self-order themselves into these long strings that we call proteins in order for life to form. And they've got to do it in a very specific order for life to occur or for proteins to develop. There are several different kinds of amino acids, and they're not interchangeable. And so for life to occur, they've got to order themselves in a very specific sequence in order to create it. And at first it was assumed, well, if you got enough time, this could happen over time. But there's not enough time. If you assume, with all the different possible combinations that these can occur in, the people have run the statistics, and they said for an amino acid to form, or a group of them, to form into a protein molecule, the odds of that happening just by chance are the same as walking blindfolded into the Sahara Desert and picking out a grain of sand, a specific grain of sand. You know, you got one little red painted grain of sand in the Sahara Desert, and you go in and you pick out that one blindfolded. And actually the odds are that you have to do that three times in a row. And that's for these amino acids to just kind of self-assemble themselves into protein. But let's be very generous. Let's assume that happened. You still don't have life. A protein molecule is still not life. It's still, you have to get about 80 of those together to form a living cell. And so even if you assume all of these highly improbable events, which still there is no mechanism which science has found to create these protein molecules naturally, but even if you did, you still haven't created life. And so that's still a very difficult problem for science to solve. So as a matter of fact, you can take the contents of a living cell and puncture it and put it into a test tube, and it's still never going to reassemble itself into life. You've got all of those components, everything you need for life, and you put it in one very confined area. You don't even have to have a primordial ocean or anything, or even a pool. You got this tiny little test tube with everything that you need in there. These amino acids that have formed into these protein molecules, and you've got it all in this very confined space, and it will still never reassemble itself into a cell. There's no mechanism for that to happen. So you've got a whole series of extremely improbable events that would have to occur to create life. And now then you're saying they keep finding early and earlier and earlier fossils that shows life existed, and they've packed it now into life had to occur almost immediately when conditions were right on the earth. And it's really created a lot of struggles in the minds of biologists. They've been desperately searching for an explanation. Yes? No, it really doesn't. Yeah, well, and the idea is that a lot of us can hear scientific explanations of well, you know, you just got all the conditions for life, and so life just kind of happened, and it can sound plausible to people because so many people don't realize the complexity of life and just how complicated it is. And so that sounds plausible on the surface until you start figuring out how could that have occurred. Yes?
One question to challenge people with, even along this kind of line, what do you mean by you can't have something that just all of a sudden appears out of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
That's just impossible. You have nothing, and then all of a sudden you have something. Where does something come from?
Yeah.
And that's an answer that scientists cannot give. They cannot answer that question.
And
they always have to start with something that existed.
Right.
And they go from that point on. But the problem is that at some point, something had to exist in order for that process to begin.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of unexplained things in science.
Another thing I wanted to address is with scientists, and this is, again, talking to somebody about this whole topic, one of the things that is important to point out is that scientists insist on evidence. They insist on empirical evidence. You have to prove these things, or they do not accept it. And generally speaking, scientists do that when it comes to just about everything except the theory of evolution, okay? They cannot prove it, but yet they keep insisting that it's true.
Mm-hmm.
So they're violating their own tenets, you see,
right.
in saying, well, yes, this happened, this happened, this happened. We can prove all of these things, and the very things that you're talking about, yes, those can be proven. No question that those things exist, but there's still a lot of things that cannot be proven, but yet they still insist that it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't have it both ways, okay? You either have to follow the evidence and prove before you say scientifically, yes, this is a fact, or you have to say, no, we cannot prove it, and so therefore it is still just a theory.
The idea is generally that science accepts natural explanations for things, and because life exists, therefore, that proves somehow it must have happened if you've already ruled out supernatural intervention. But if you take a step back, really, that's not the way science operates. With science, you should look at, okay, given all of the evidence, what is the most plausible explanation? And the most plausible explanation is that there had to be some kind of supernatural intervention in order for it to happen. Yes, sir.
Well, it was right. And the only one to try to explain why things happen. I mean, it was a fair what I used to do. I look at some of these pictures, maybe a horror movie or something. They always have to have man-made that looked like a man or woman, and they want to make it look like. But anything that they can look like is something that's already been created.
Mm-hmm.
It's been created by God. So what they do is reconstruct it to make it look like something out of this world. Even if you got aliens, God made the universe. So if there are aliens anywhere, how did they come about? Who created them?
And
the Bible tells me that God created.
Yeah. And it's not impossible that life exists on other planets, because we don't know that God chose Earth by itself in order to run this experiment. He could have planted life anywhere he wanted to.
Right.
And so, but we don't know that, but we know that if it did occur, that's what happened.
Yeah,
so,
that's all I'm trying to say, that God did it all.
Right. And
man had nothing to do with it.
Mirrors up there that we put up.
Yeah, I mean, people did go to the moon. Yeah, there's no question about that. But they said, the astronauts actually planted mirrors up there that you can reflect a laser off of right now. And so that's not in question. But to me, that explorer spirit is part of what God gave us, the natural inquisitiveness. And, God wants us to explore the world around us, because it's really leading people to the idea that God exists. He says all this is God's handiwork. Admire it. And as you begin to examine it in more and more levels of detail, you see the magnificence of the creation, of just how complex. The deeper you go into a cell, the more complicated and fascinating it becomes.
Yeah.
I think we have to be real careful. We have a reputation as Christians a lot of times being science deniers.
Mm-hmm.
Science is not the enemy. Mm-hmm. And in fact, science proves a lot of things that we've been saying a long time. It's getting where we can look into the womb and see a child growing earlier and earlier. We are saving babies earlier and earlier. And yet we have people telling us, at this point it's just a blob of cells.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why there's a big push against having a woman have an ultrasound before she has an abortion, because she might see what's in there and change her mind when she sees that there's a fully formed little head in there, five fingers on each hand.
Who's the science denier here?
Enemy.
Yeah. If you're the science denier, if you say that's not a child in there, when you can look in and see a formed infant with a beating heart and say that's not a human being, it's like, no, at that point you're the science denier.
And I look at like when Brian Sides had his accident, shortly after that you have one of your former cadets had a horrible accident. Both of them were rushed to VCU where they have this trauma center. And I'm not saying that God didn't have a hand in their healing, but I'm also thinking God gave us some doctors with some pretty neat skills that did a lot of things. Luke was a physician. But we have people that want to deny even, we don't need doctors. Well, and I just picture God saying, I've given you these people here to do these things for you.
Yep, Russ.
Along that same line, one of the problems that we oftentimes run into is, and with this whole evolution thing, is the connection of dinosaurs to evolution. And that's one of the big things that the evolutionists have really pushed is, the dinosaurs and all of that connection to that. And yet as Christians, we sit there and go, no, that didn't happen. Well, yes, it did. There are dinosaurs on the earth. Why do we feel like we have to deny that dinosaurs existed? And accepting that does not disprove the creation story.
Right.
There's so much scientific evidence that dinosaurs did exist. And there's biblical evidence that dinosaurs existed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we need to understand, you know, to accept science does not mean that we accept evolution. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay? We have to be able to separate those things. And really a lot of it is a matter of holding, you know, the evolutionist feet to the fire, so to speak, again, mm-hmm. to prove, don't just tell me your theories, don't just theorize and then prove it.
Yeah, show
because
the evidence.
Here's the bottom line, and this is what I tell people when we're talking about this. It requires faith either way.
Mm-hmm. It does.
Because I cannot prove that God exists. But you cannot prove that he doesn't, and you cannot prove that everything happened by evolution. So mm-hmm. both of them are an issue of faith.
Mm-hmm.
Now, which one has better and more evidence?
Right.
You say to believe it.
Yep. I've got a quote here by one of the leading biochemists. It says, more than 30 years of experimentation on the origin of life in the fields of chemical and molecular evolution have led to a better perception of the immensity of the problem of the origin of life on Earth rather than to its solution. At present, all discussions on principal theories and experiments in the field either end in stalemate or a confession of ignorance. And what that says is, despite all the best efforts, scientists can't explain where life came from. There is no explanation. They've come up with a lot of theories. You know, they started with the primordial pool. And then they realized, okay, that's just really not possible. So then you got hydrothermal vents under the ocean, which, you know, if you look under there, you've got warm chemicals spewing out of the Earth's core. And life is thriving down there around those because it's a warm spot in the bottom of the ocean. But the biologists looked at it and they said, even if you injected life into that, the heat would kill it. You know, that's not really a solution to the problem. And so whenever scientists come up with theories, other scientists are shooting them down, saying, well, it sounds like a good idea, but it won't work because of this. They finally moved the problem and said, okay, maybe asteroids brought life to Earth and it crashed, and that's where the life came from. But you're still just moving the problem to a different environment if you do that. It's not impossible for life to survive out in space and arrive. That's not an issue. That's possible. But you still haven't solved the problem of where life came from. You just moved it to a different planet. Yeah. It's definitely been hit by some asteroids.
Right.
No question about that.
Anything that has been, quote unquote, discovered on this planet was left behind by someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing that man has ever done is clear to the concept. We have discovered what God has left behind.
Mm-hmm.
We are discovering his handiwork. We are discovering that he is magnificent, that he is awesome, that he is a great creator. That the thing that he spoke into existence is magnificent. Even if it is a skunk or an elephant, all those different things that he made, the hummingbird, the pelican, all of it in between, has its purpose, has its design. They duplicate after each other. You don't have a guppy coming out to be a whale.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a whale coming out to be a guppy. God has it with his plan to do that.
Okay. Yes, Brian.
No, you look at biblical history. As we get more and more scientific, we're finding out that the stuff they've been denying in the Bible and the story has been actually history.
Mm-hmm.
As science progresses forward, they're proving more and more that there had to be intelligence involved, and a lot of it's going that way. The science is, like I said earlier, about our industry.
We're not the only ones with a flood story.
Right.
As an example.
That's true. And let me give you another little piece of evidence here. If you just wander out onto the beach You go down to Virginia Beach or Outer Banks, and you wander down there, and you find that there are rocks out on the beach that have spelled out your name. Do you assume those rocks just washed up that way? Or would you assume that somebody went out and arranged those rocks with your name on it, probably your significant other as a surprise or something? If somebody tried to convince you that, no, that just happened by natural processes, they would never, ever convince you of that. Have you ever heard of the SETI program? Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. Radio telescopes scan the heavens looking at different, you know, star systems and things. And what are they looking for on there? When they're listening, what are they listening for?
Communication.
Okay, something that's non-random. They're saying if there are other species and if they have developed the ability to transmit on there, we should be able to pick it up. And so if we pick up a signal that's non-random, then we know for certain that's not created by natural things. There's lots of things produce radio signals. You know, that's not in question. Stars and things broadcast all the time, but it's random. It's what we call white noise or something. You know, it's just electromagnetic interference more than anything. That's why when you're listening to the radio and you get a burst of static, you know, whenever there's a lightning flash, that's electromagnetic interference. But if that lightning flashed and suddenly it had intelligible words coming out of the radio as a result of it, you know, that would mean, okay, there was some kind of intelligence behind that. You know, somebody found a way to modulate a lightning bolt and put information on it. And so that's just kind of a given. If you detect a signal and it's got, you know, what appears to be, you know, some version of like Morse code or something that's non-random, it's not just a repeating signal or something like that, then scientists would all say, we found evidence of extraterrestrial life. Now, why do I say all this, and what does it have to do with evolution? In every cell of your body, you've got DNA in there, and it has information in it. And yet, the theory of evolution would tell you that came about by random chance. And we're not talking about, you know, a little bit of information. In every cell in that DNA, it's got instructions on how to build you as an individual. That information, it controls, you know, what the color of your hair is and the color of your eyes and how tall are you likely to grow, and you know, all of your different characteristics are encoded into that information. It's got roughly the same information as a 30-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica in that cell. But it seems that a lot of people aren't applying that same principle, that if you see information, non-random information, that means there's a designer behind it. That means there is intelligence behind it. And that's really one of the best evidences we have of God, is the fact that we've got the remnants of His design in our very own body. That you can look in there. That's, you know, if you hear talk about cloning people, that's essentially what you're doing, is you're trying to take their DNA and build another person that's just like that person, which in theory you could do given that information, because it's got everything it needs to build another person like you. So that information is already encoded in your body, in there. And yet, you know, it's like this is the one example of whenever scientists would say, well, that information came from nowhere, essentially, that there wasn't a designer behind that information. Yes. Okay, Kathy and then Chuck.
There you go.
That's true.
That's
true. Yes, Chuck. And other both of you Chucks. Oh, absolutely. Yes and yes. It's
like they don't receive any money or any grants or anything.
Yeah, it's not a popular opinion in the mainstream scientific community, but to answer your questions, yes, there are many, many scientists that sometimes as a result of their work have realized that, I mean, just like the biologist, the biochemist that I just gave you the quote from, they've realized that there's just not a natural explanation for the origin of life. And we talked briefly about the same thing with the origin of the universe. Once they realized the universe hadn't been here for an infinite amount of time, that meant it had a beginning. And if it had a beginning, that means it had to have a cause. Nothing happens without a cause. And so something had to cause that beginning. And there is, just like the origin of life, there is no natural explanation that makes any real sense to people as far as how that occurred. Well, and it's
something that banged.
Well, I mean,
that's right. We don't know what mechanism God used.
Exactly. And sometimes God does work through natural mechanisms. I mean, whenever Jesus was on the cross, it got dark for several hours. And, you know, whether you believe this is how God did it or not, there was a solar eclipse in Jerusalem in 30 AD. But even if God used that mechanism to make it dark, that doesn't detract from the idea that God had to arrange things and make things happen at that specific time in order to use that for his purposes. So it doesn't, I mean, you can say, oh, well, that was just an eclipse that happened, perfectly natural. That it happened at that moment, that defies all the thoughts of probability that would just happen to occur. But God may have used that to make it be dark. You know, sometimes God does use natural means for to accomplish his purposes, and sometimes he uses supernatural means to accomplish his purposes. Yes? It's important to separate the idea of science behind individual scientists. Yeah. Just like Christianity is perfect in and of itself, but there's a lot of imperfect Christians running around that give Christianity a bad name. And science is simply the orderly investigation of information. And nothing wrong with that. And so God gave us the sense of being inquisitive and in the interest that we're going to learn more about his creation as we do that.
You know, somebody asked me if I believe in evolution. Yeah, I believe things evolve. And this is, hear me out here. Mm-hmm. We are not the same type of human. We don't have the same type of body that our ancestors have. For one thing, we're living a lot longer. I remember the first time we were in Japan, the very first time we rode the train in Japan, used to head and shoulders above everyone else. In fact, everyone in that car turned and looked at you. Because you're 6 feet tall. The second time we went there, what was it? It would have been 10 years later.
Mm-hmm.
You were not the tallest guy on the train a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
They were eating a lot
in that short
meat.
Of a period of time. Yeah.
Yeah, and we started seeing a few. We even started seeing a few overweight people, which we never saw the first time. Mm-hmm.
But I didn't see any new species of human during
species.
That time.
Oh, no, but our bodies
yeah.
adapt. I mean, when you taught J-Rot, so you've had kids coming in there with size 14 shoes. I'd never seen a 14 shoe when my kids were growing up. But according to my DNA, I'm strictly from Northern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
The British Isles, my whole family, I mean, I'm almost pure. And I should have lily white skin, but when I was a kid in Louisiana riding my bike in the summer, people mm-hmm. thought I was Hispanic because I had dark hair and my skin was so dark because my skin adapted to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing is, I see it as this wonderful plan God has. Our bodies adapt to whatever situation we're in. We're not going to grow gills.
Mm-hmm.
I got that. When my brother went into the Army, people used to ask him if he had webbed feet because he's from Louisiana. But the earth evolves and things evolve. We make hybrid plants. What about purebred dogs? You remember the thing we saw on TV about that?
Yeah, but there's not actually such a thing as a purebred dog because dogs didn't breed within their species. It took people to take dogs with similar characteristics to create, and as recently as the 1800s to create most of the species that we know today as pure blood. Actually, they're just inbred. The different breeds of dogs were created by using the selective breeding.
We make hybrid versions of wheat and corn that will grow in different climates so that people mm-hmm. there can eat.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I believe that things can evolve and be manipulated.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and we're just using what God has already created mm-hmm. and what He's given us the knowledge and the wisdom to be able to do. Well, you're right there.
You know, I have a jar in my garage. It's an automotive garage. There's motorcycles, there's oil, there's tires, there's books, there's all the right things for this jar of hardware, a loose hardware jar. You know, nuts, bolts, washers, little odds and ends. I go in there and shake it, and you know what? That Lamborghini has not popped out of there.
I know. Don't you hate that? All right.
Well,
on that, I think we'll close. Chuck, can you lead us in a closing prayer?